more of Idaho Matters right now. Okay, so first the good news. Idaho has gone a week without a resident of our state dying from COVID-19. Now the bad news. The disease is still spreading here in our state. And by best estimates, we are months away from a vaccine or a cure. Now, with the state now in reopening stage 3 of 4 stages, it is sometimes hard to remember that we are still just a few months into this pandemic. Thankfully, though, the human species has gone through this kind of thing many times before. Joining us today is Joshua Loomis. He is a professor of biology at the University of East Stroudsburg in Pennsylvania. He studies the history of pandemics. In fact, he's written a book. It is titled Epidemics: The Impact of Germs and Their Power Over Humanity. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Gemma, for having me.
So how do you approach your work as a biologist who actually writes about history? I'm curious how kind of like, you know, how kind of you marry the two together.
Yeah, so I've always had this fascination with history and the impacts of these epidemic diseases. I think all too often we see people reporting these diseases just as statistics. And we've seen that even talking about things like smallpox and the Black Death. And it's hard to imagine a disease killing 50 million people in 1 year, for instance, like the 1918 flu. And so kind of growing up in biology when I was in graduate school, that's often how I saw these diseases presented. I was always kind of fascinated of, you know, what impact did they have to society, to medicine, how we relate to one another. And so that really was kind of impetus for me to write the book and really educate myself more on the topic.
So you mentioned the Black Death. Can we start with that? Because this swept across the world, basically, in the 14th century. We do know that that it was spread by fleas and rats, and it killed up to 60% of the population in Europe. And at that time, I mean, I can just imagine that people literally thought that the world was ending. It did not. Humans survived. What lessons, though, do you see from the Black Death and other, you know, medieval outbreaks?
Yeah, I think it shows how we did what we're able to adapt and innovate. Now, that's probably maybe one of the bad examples, because in the 14th century, we really didn't have really any kind of real knowledge of microbiology or any real technology. But pretty much every other major pandemic disease from that point on, humans were really shown to be innovative when we were put under such amazing stress. Pretty much every major medical innovation that we can think of, from developing the ICU to combat the polio epidemic and vaccines and antibiotics, sanitation, all these came about because it was basically develop these innovations or we were at risk of being wiped out. And the Black Death was probably one of the more significant examples of that. I think more than any other epidemic in history, the general population really did think this was it. This was God's punishment against mankind, and we were not going to recover from it. No other epidemic, like smallpox, was serious, but it lasted over a period of thousands of years. To have that many people die of the Black Death in just really about 4 years was significant. It had major impacts on the Christian church. Before that point, we never even had medical schools or really even medical literature. And it was after that point they realized, hey, we have to do a better job of training our medical professionals to deal with issues like this. So it was really significant changes that we saw.
Okay, so you mentioned smallpox, and like you said, I mean, different from the Black Plague, but it really went in the 15th century, basically across Europe and Asia. And I mean, you say in the book that parents would often wait to actually name their child because they were afraid that they would die, first. So can you kind of help us understand, you know, how much that disease, which really seemed to target younger people, made a difference in medicine at that point in history?
Yeah, so smallpox, I think for those of us that are kind of my age, in our 40s and above, smallpox was kind of like how we used to deal with chicken pox during our childhoods. Pretty much everyone got it at some point. It was just a matter of time. You know, now we have the vaccine, so we don't see that anymore. Smallpox was very similar. Pretty much everyone got it, and it killed about 30% of the population, usually in populations that the disease had been present for a long time, like in Europe. And then those that survived were either blinded or scarred a great amount of time. Now, when it reached the New World in the early 1500s, it was devastating because native populations had never experienced smallpox before. So there was no level of genetic resistance or any kind of immunity to it. So they've estimated, along with measles and flu, it may have wiped out 80, 90% of the population in the Americas. So again, they didn't really have an ability to kind of innovate to combat it, but Europeans eventually did. So smallpox had been tormenting our species for thousands of years. I mean, they had found Egyptian mummies that had smallpox marks when they unearthed it. So they called it the Great Tormentor. It's been with us forever. So it finally led, thankfully, in the late 1700s for a guy named Edward Jenner to develop the first vaccine ever. So we have smallpox to thank for really all the vaccines that we take nowadays. It came about because of that that seriousness of the disease.
Okay, so before we move into the United States, I'm curious to know, are there other pandemics, I mean, whether it's the Western or the Eastern Hemisphere, that you find especially interesting and want to maybe highlight for our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, the one that I've had my students ask me this often, what my favorite disease is, and I got to go, I think, with tuberculosis. Because like smallpox, it's really been with our species as long as we've existed, and it still is sort of beating us. TB kills, still on average, almost 1 million people every single year.
Still,
yeah. This is with the advent of antibiotics, of everything we know. We've sequenced its genome. It is almost a perfect pathogen. We haven't been able to develop a vaccine against it. It's. I don't want to kind of be in awe of a disease, but it's really just biologically absolutely amazing. It's still impacting, especially in places like Africa now, where you get these co-infections with HIV and TB. And I know a lot of epidemiologists in Africa actually treat them almost as a single infection because so many people are co-infected. So I have a feeling 100 years from now, we're still going to be talking about tuberculosis in the same light.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Joshua Loomis. He's a professor of biology at the University of East Roseburg in Pennsylvania. And we're talking about the history of pandemics, I mean, in light of coronavirus. So let's head to the United States now and the diseases that we've seen survive in relatively short history. So, colonists came from Europe, they brought disease that killed Native Americans. I mean, you mentioned that's really, you know, what smallpox did, what the measles did. Can you kind of give us a sense though, for how these diseases spread from the colonies, like all the way across the country and really inflicted devastation on indigenous people?
Yeah, it really did. I mean, you read some histories of the colonization of the Americas, and very often they give the credit to Cortez and Pizarro and their armies. But in reality, it was really the diseases that did the bulk of the work. You could almost watch it, this gradual movement from the East Coast. It arrived basically on Cortez's ship with one of the slaves that was suffering from smallpox. And then from there, as Europeans moved more so into North America and also into South America, these colonists would bring the diseases over with them on these ships. And then as they interacted with native populations for trading, especially fur trading was kind of a common mode by which these diseases kind of were inoculated into these populations. Mm-hmm. And then it would just be a wave. I mean, you could see it's amazing in a matter of 30 or 40 years, some entire cultures were gone with all their oral histories, their sense of medicine, their traditions. Everything was gone in a matter of 30 years after being exposed to these diseases. It was, and I don't want to just focus on the Americas. This happened also in parts of Africa and Australia as well with the Aborigines, for instance. It's a common way that Europeans took over. They bring their diseases first, let the diseases kill off and weaken the population, and then they move in with their weapons afterwards.
So do we know whether Native Americans actually experienced any pandemics before the white settlers came in?
So there, unfortunately, most Native American cultures didn't keep good written records, but in terms of our ability to sequence the genomes of these different things like Yersinia pestis, which causes plague and smallpox, there's almost no indication that these diseases existed in the Americas. The only one that was really a question for a long time was yellow fever, because it was so well entrenched in the Americas, it made it seem like it had been there a long time. But they sequenced samples of this virus all over the Americas and compared it with Africa, and it turned out it did indeed arise in Africa. So there was almost no epidemic disease in the Americas before the 16th century. Now, obviously, people died of disease, but there were no pandemics. That's a European invention. And obviously, again, some came from Africa, like yellow fever and malaria.
So let's get to the 20th century, and let's talk a little bit about the Spanish flu. This started in 1918, and because there's so, you know, people, there's been a lot of talk about a lot of comparisons, I think, with coronavirus and the spread of it compared to what happened with the Spanish flu. So first, can you kind of just give us like kind of a quick rundown of how it came to the United States first, and then you know, how maybe like our state fared compared to other states?
Yeah, so Spanish flu is one of the worst named diseases in history. Yeah. It did not arise in Spain. It had nothing to do with Spain other than the Spanish press were one of the only countries where they were actually reporting on it early on. So there was an assumption it started there. Actually, they think arose in Kansas, one of the forts where they were training soldiers for World War I. It didn't arise in China. There's been a lot of theories. Again, they've mapped it to Kansas, and it spread basically with the troops as they moved all over the world. It was extremely contagious and extremely virulent compared to any other flu, or really any other disease. It really kind of goes down as the single worst pandemic in human history. They estimate it killed as many as 100 million people in just about a year. Wow. Which is, you know, absolutely insane amount to consider. There were really three waves of it. The first wave wasn't as bad. It was the second wave that began in September of 1918 that started mainly in the east. And then it gradually kind of moved its way towards the west, towards places like Idaho and Washington, Oregon. So what we find, because there was sort of this delay, the first case reported in Idaho was actually late October, which kind of significantly after about 5 or 6 weeks after it was popping up in places like Philadelphia and New York. So there was a little better preparation they were able to make. So I think the top states that I guess you'd say fared the best. Now, let me say no state fared well against 1918 flu, but the two that fared the best were actually Washington and Oregon. Idaho didn't really have great record keeping, and that was a pretty strong criticism at the time. I think largely because they were still very rural at that point, but also there was a conscious effort by some in places like Boise where, and this was common, they didn't want to really alarm the population. So a lot of cities erred on the side of really not reporting on it and not publishing death statistics because they thought it would cause panic. And as you could, and we see this kind of same kind of thing with COVID now, of how much do we report it? Do we see it 24 hours a day in our news cycle? And does that freak everyone out? Does it do more harm than good? Or is being open more important? Well, in 1918, there was more of a focus on the war than the flu early on.
And on transparency, right? And, you know, that's interesting that you say that, you know, Idaho fared a bit better based on it being rural and you know, and kind of having a you know, 5 to 6 weeks before they saw a first case. That's a similar pattern in Idaho with the coronavirus as well. And I'm curious, as someone who studies this for a living, what are you watching for, but also what are you hoping for when it comes to getting us through this current pandemic?
Yeah, so that I think is where a lot of the similarities to 1918 flu kind of end. The epidemiology of the two on the surface look similar. They're both respiratory. They're both pretty contagious. early on, it looked like they had similar death rates, but it looks like Corona's a bit less than that. But when you look at flu, it really truly is a seasonal disease. You see the levels go down as the temperature rises and humidity goes up. This coronavirus is behaving much more similarly to other coronaviruses that are already in existence. There are currently five coronaviruses that are already in our population besides this new one. And four of them generally just kind of cause cold and flu-like symptoms, and it's not really all that deadly. And what we see from those strains is that they don't really leave. They kind of enter the population and just kind of hang around from month to month and year to year. And if you look at the epidemiology of this strain, we're seeing similar things. Yeah, in some places, cases are going down, but I unfortunately think this is here to stay until we get a vaccine. There's been no sign that we're going to see a drastic drop in corona cases. Yeah. Just by social distancing. Again, we're hoping to, kind of lessen the curve, but it's not going to just suddenly disappear like 1918 flu did. Right. It's just a totally different virus in that regard.
Thank you so much for taking some time to talk to us about this. Such a fascinating topic and everything, and maybe also kind of giving us a little bit of hope that we can move forward. We've been talking with biology professor Joshua Loomis with the University of East Strodsburg in Pennsylvania. His book, Epidemics, The Impact of Germs and Their Power Over Humanity, can be found online. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
More of Idaho Matters next.